As we pick back up on this subject, excuse me, remember that the audience started in the previous chapter. Chapter 15, the Pharisees are there, the scribes are there, the tax collectors and the sinners and his apostles and disciples are all there. Before he even begins to start on the material, the Pharisees begin to complain that he's spending too much time with who?
Sinners.
With sinners. Okay. Problem with that is, how do you convert sinners if you don't spend any time with them? So, and of course, they didn't want to spend any time with them because they didn't care about them. So Jesus gives three parables. He gives the parable of the lost sheep. What happens when the man finds the lost sheep?
Rejoicing.
And what happens in heaven when one sinner repents? Rejoicing. All right. Then we have the lost coin. Then we have the prodigal son. Then Jesus moves into the unjust steward. And at the end of that parable, what are the Pharisees doing? They're scoffing. They're scoffing at what he's teaching about making friends with unrighteous mammon so that when it fails, they can receive you into eternal tabernacles. So now he moves to, and again, I don't know the answer to this. Some people think it's a parable. Some people think it's an actual account. As we discussed it last week, I think the simplest conclusion is, does it really make any difference? Does Jesus teach anything in a parable that's not true? Would he tell us about things in heaven and then we find out after the fact that none of it was true? Of course he wouldn't do that. So if it's a parable, does it make any difference? If it's a real account, it doesn't make any difference. There's a few key points along the way that seem to indicate that it might be more likely that it's a parable, but then there's other situations where you say, well, probably not. So, as I point out in that very first parable or paragraph, if this is a parable, so I don't know. Last week, I think maybe I left you with the impression that I thought it was a parable. I don't know. So, all right, so the beggar dies. Now, from that point on, if it is a parable, where are we? Are we in uncharted territory? What happens after death if you read the Old Testament? We really don't know. You see, all we have is there's these two little boxes on the first page there, and they're just filled with verses. The first box, he tells Abraham, "You shall go to your fathers." And then he tells him a little later, or it says a little later, that he died an old man full of good years and was gathered to his people. All right, so who are these people he's being gathered to? Remember Hebrews 11? These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having greeted them from afar and embraced them and confessed. What'd they confess? Okay, yeah, this world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. We are strangers and pilgrims. They're looking for a country whose builder, or excuse me, a city and a country whose builder and maker is God. So as you look through these, you see over and over again, I really like the one at the very bottom there, Judges, where it says, "So the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done, when all that generation had been gathered to their fathers. Another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord." Now, when Jesus deals with this, you remember what the Sadducees taught about the resurrection and life after death? There isn't any. All right. So he gives them the burning bush. What did God say at the burning bush that they couldn't answer? Okay, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then God, or then Jesus says what? God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. So what's the necessary inference? If God is not the God of the, if God is the God of the living, and he's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he himself says, "I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob," what's the only conclusion we can draw?
Resurrection.
Well, they're living, right? They are alive. Right then. But where are they? What are they doing? Well, we don't have any points of reference for that. Now, the next section, again, says basically the same thing. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. And the Spirit returns to God who gave it. And all the days of Enoch. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. And so we Elijah goes up by a whirlwind into heaven. But once again, once they die, what information in the Old Testament do we have about what happens next? And the answer is there isn't anything. So this information can't be confirmed. But as I said, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week. Look at that verse at the very top of the page. If I told you earthly things and you do not believe, how will you believe if I tell you what? Heavenly thing. Is this a heavenly thing? Yeah. Do we believe it? Well, I think we have to believe it. And I'll show you a little bit more later. But John the Baptist gives the same testimony in verse 31 there. He who comes from above is above all. He who is of the earth is earthly and speaks of the earth. He who comes from heaven is above all. And so Jesus is giving or has been given the opportunity to explain the next step after death. And so what he says is the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. Now, the angels, what's their purpose in Hebrews chapter 1?
Ministering.
Okay, yeah. They are ministering to who? Okay, to the saints. All right, so what does that infer about Lazarus? Is he a saint?
Yeah.
Well, they went to minister to him. So, again, we don't know any more than this. We don't know anything about angels, except the few things we learn about. And here, Jesus says that they're involved. You don't think about it. When you die, do you have any, at any point of reference at all, what's next? Where are we going? What are we doing? So Jesus says that they're carried by the angels. Now, most people who read this take great comfort in it because, again, this parable is about all we know of the interim between the time we die and the resurrection. Now, we know that Moses and Elijah came to do what with Jesus at the Mount of Transfiguration? They came to talk to him about what? All right, his upcoming death in Jerusalem. So does it infer that as these people are alive somewhere else that they're still learning things they didn't know when they died? What did Moses know about Jerusalem when he died? He didn't. What did he know about the Messiah coming and dying? But now he's come down to talk to him about that. So it's just, again, you get this little glimpse here, this little glimpse here. You try to put it together. I don't know if you can put it together, but we try to make a composite of what happens after death. Now, it's really interesting here because Jesus talks about dipping a finger. He talks about water. He talks about fire. He talks about anguish. And we're just left with no real understanding of how that works. Okay, so let's go ahead and turn over to page 2. So, Lazarus died first, then he was carried by angels, and he was taken to Abraham's bosom. Why is it called Abraham's bosom?
That's where the faithful are in Hades.
Okay. Why do we pick Abraham? Why not Enoch? What's that?
He's our father.
Father of the righteous.
Okay. All right. And I think that's the answer. I think and right in the middle of page 2, that was the promise. You shall be a father of many nations. And then Paul tells us later he really wanted that. He wanted to be the father of all the nations. And Paul says in verse 16, who is Abraham the father of? Of us all. Now, is the book of Romans written to Gentiles primarily or to Jews? Okay, so how are the Gentiles the children of Abraham? What's Galatians 3:27 through 29 say about that? Many of us, as we're baptized into Christ, have what? We put on Christ. And if you are Christ, verse 29, then you are Abraham's seed, heirs according to the promise. Then in chapter 4, I think about verse 16, he says, we, like Isaac, are children of what?
Promise.
Children of promise. We're just like Isaac. Isaac was born outside of the normal way that children are born. So are we. Because baptism makes us a child of Abraham. So since Abraham is the father of all the nations, it makes perfect sense that Jesus would place him in this position. Now, does that mean every one of us will be in Abraham's bosom?
Are we stretching
a little bit here? You know, you look at this. What I did here is at the bottom. Where did I put it? the third paragraph, fourth paragraph from the bottom. To put this together, we must borrow the terms torments and Hades from the next verse. This is one of the most important aspects and gives us a point of reference to build on. All right, so Hades is where the rich man is, right? Torment is in Hades. He was in Hades in torment. Now, what does Peter tell us in Acts chapter 2 about Jesus after he died? Where'd he go? He went to Hades. So, and he's very clear about this. You look at that verse at the bottom of page 2. You will not leave my soul in Hades. And then verse 29, let me speak freely of you, of the patriarch David. He's both dead and buried, and his tomb is with us to this day. So where's David still? He's still in Hades. Therefore, being a prophet, so verse 31, foreseeing this, he spoke concerning the resurrection of the Christ, that his soul was not left in Hades. Now, if it was not left in Hades, where was it before it came out?
It was in Hades and in paradise.
Okay, exactly. He told the thief on the cross, today you will be with me in paradise. And therefore, since he's in Hades, where's paradise? It has to be. So we've got torment where? In Hades. We've got paradise where? In Hades. So then we got a great gulf between them. The reason I'm spending so much time on this is because I was reading some writings today, and there's a lot of people out there who don't believe that this is the case. They think that when you die, you immediately go to heaven, go to be with God. That heaven's already there, and hell is already there. But is that what Revelation 20 describes? No. And why would Jesus need the keys to death and Hades if nobody's in there anymore? So I think that, and why does Paul say, oh, death, where is your sting? Oh, Hades, where is your what? Your victory. Because it's going to be burst open. All right, let's go to page 3. With 3 points at the top of the page. 1, the beggar died, was carried by angels to Abraham's bosom. 2, the rich man died, being in torments in Hades. And 3, between us and you, there is a great gulf or a great chasm that has been fixed. So Hades is the place where those who have died are taken. Now, do we know how the rich man got there? Just as being in Hades. And one guy put it kind of interesting. He said, let's hope we never find out how you get into Hades or how you get into torment. Because Jesus didn't tell us how to get there. So what's the only way you're going to figure it out? If you're going there. So hopefully none of us, all of us are going to see the angels taking us to Abraham's bosom. That's what we want. All right. Down about 3 inches from the top of page 3, I know a man in Christ about 14 years ago. Whether in the body, I do not know, or whether out of the body, I do not know. Such a one was caught up to the third heaven. And I know such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, God knows, how he was caught up into paradise and heard inexpressible words, which it is not lawful for a man to utter. So was paradise still there after the resurrection of Jesus? Yeah, because Paul, 14 years ago, that would put us about, 40, 38, 39, maybe 40. 14 years ago, whether in the body or out of the body, I've always interpreted it as he doesn't know whether he was dead or alive. He doesn't know whether this was an actual event that occurred. I think it's talking about when he was stoned. I think when he was stoned and left for dead, that's just about 14 years earlier. Now, can I prove that? No, I can't prove it. But for him to say, I don't know if it was in the body or out of the body, if he's out of his body, what's his body? If you're not in your body anymore, what's your body?
Dead.
It's dead. So it's either a vision, he says, like John. John saw visions. He wasn't actually out of his body. Paul says, I don't know. I don't know if I was in the body or out of the body. I don't know if I actually went there or if I just got a vision. But he tells us two things here. First of all, where is paradise? It's in Hades. And now we learn he was caught up where? To the third heaven. Now, the first two heavens are here on earth, right? The first heaven's where the bird flies. The second heavens is where the sun, the moon, and the stars are. That's why in Genesis chapter 1 it says, In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Where's the third heaven? Well, that's where God is. That's the spiritual realm. That's where the angels are. And so where is Hades? It's in the spiritual realm. So Hades is in the spiritual realm. Now again, can we see God there? I don't know. Are we in the presence of God? Is Hades such that the great gulf takes it all the way up into the presence of God? The scriptures don't tell us. One thing Paul says that's always intrigued me, in Philippians chapter 1, he says that to depart and be with Christ is very far better. So the implication there is that there's something along those lines. Go ahead, George.
That I lost my thought there. That
I'll tell you what, we'll come back to it. Let me tell you when it's bad is when I'm up there preaching and I lose my train of thought. If you've ever seen me up there and all of a sudden I've gone off on a tangent, it's because I didn't remember what I was talking about. And I hate it when that happens, but it's happening more and more to me. Yes?
I always thought this passage, Paul's passage here is really interesting. We almost lost my mom in 2018. She had a surgery and she nearly bled out. She hemorrhaged and she nearly bled out and almost died. And she had a very similar experience to what Paul talks about here, is that she had somewhat of an out-of-body experience where she chose not to die, which, whether that was due to all of the trauma that her body was in, or it was an actual out-of-body experience, I can't know.
Right.
She was very real to her.
Right.
None of us really get in touch with our spiritual being on a regular basis, because we're the only thing we can comprehend is this physical world that we've always existed in.
Right.
But I think that it's really imperative that we all recognize and be more familiar with our soul, because it helps us release ourselves from the dependencies of this world.
Right.
We oftentimes get distracted and way too focused at the expense of our potential eternal life.
Right. That's a good point. George, you got your thought back?
Yeah, I was going to say that scriptures tell us that our spirit returns to God who gave it when we die.
Right.
So we are returning to God now, but we go to Hades from what this is telling us. So as far as whether or not we physically see God at that point in time, there's no indication.
Right. Except. Right. And that, this is just a temporary interim period. We're kind of focused on it because that's what's next for us, unless what happens first?
Resurrection.
Unless the resurrection occurs. And Paul makes an interesting point in 2 Corinthians 5. He says there, we don't want to be clothed unclothed, but we want to be clothed upon. And the implication there is that Paul would prefer for the resurrection than he would for the death. But again, Deuteronomy 29:29 says what? Okay, the secret things belong to God. So I can take us right up to the very edge of what the scriptures say, and then what?
Stop.
I'm done. You say, well, wait a minute, Alan, you've led us right up to here. Well, that's as far as the Lord led us. There's no more. Paul says he doesn't want to be unclothed, but he wants to be clothed upon. So, but this interim period seems to be pretty exciting. The word paradise is only used two other times in the scriptures. It's used in Genesis as the paradise of Eden, and it's used of one of the parks that Nebuchadnezzar had in the book of Daniel. So it's a beautiful place. And it may very well be that when Adam and Eve sinned, God had to make Hades, God had to make death, and God had to make torment and paradise. And if he used the Garden of Eden to pattern paradise after, all the better. Now again, can we go any further than that? No, we can't. But here's the points I think that we can make. There's four points right in the middle of page three. Number one, both torment and paradise are in Hades. I don't think there's any question about that. I think that's proven by the fact that the rich man was in Hades and Jesus was in Hades and Jesus was in paradise, and it sure doesn't sound like where the rich man is in paradise, does it? So they're both in Hades with a great gulf fixed. So the gulf is there, but it doesn't push paradise out of Hades. It's still in the Hadean realm. All right, number two, paradise is in the third heaven. Paradise is in Hades. Therefore, Hades is in the third heaven. Number three, the rich man was in torment in Hades. And the great gulf fixed between the two reveals that Hades has two distinct areas. And I don't think anybody here would disagree with that. I think that we've seen enough. Anybody want to wax eloquent on this before we move away from it?
Well, let me ask the question here. That great gulf fixed, the rich man could see Lazarus, couldn't he?
That's, we're going to get to that. Yeah, that's one of the... Go ahead. That's all right.
I'm just going to ask a question right there. Well, you know, I mean, if he could see him and everything, that means that he was looking up and he saw who, where he was and everything. And then the Bible says, okay, he couldn't come to them and he couldn't go to... They couldn't come to him, whatever, you know. So in other words, what I'm thinking is that if he could see him, he could see the torment. I mean, how the rich man was living, how he was at that time, and he's in torment right there. So, in other words, anybody that's in Hades could look up and see, or if that happened later, I mean, I need to phrase this a different way.
Well,
but when we die, if that's the case right there, then it means that people that we know, or that know us, or where we are, then it means that they could be able to see us.
Well, yeah, that's an element that is perplexing. You know, that's why some people say it's easier to see this as a parable, and that's just part of the imagery of the parable. Or it may be that Abraham can, in fact, although how pleasant would that be to be able to see people in torment, see your mom in torment, your brothers in torment.
See, if you're in paradise, I'm thinking you're at peace, you're at rest. And seeing people, if you're able to see people, I was going to comment on this, because if you're going to be able to see people in torment, that's not going to be very peaceful or restful. I don't know how you can reconcile those two. So I've always wondered if people in paradise, I've always kind of lived in my, conclusions. People in paradise can't see the folks in torment, but the people in torment can see the folks that are in paradise. I don't know if that's true or not, but it kind of makes sense to me.
Well, that's the way I was looking at that. Right? In other words, they could see you, but maybe you couldn't see them. But the right. Bible does say that they couldn't come to you, and then he couldn't go to them or whatever.
Well, yeah, and that, as I say, let's see here. Oh, let me finish this one point, then we'll go on. Okay, Hades is still in existence for several reasons. Let's look at those three verses right next to the third heaven box, okay? I am he who lives and was dead. I am alive forevermore. And I have the keys of what?
Hades and of death.
I have the keys of death. Is death still here? Does it still need to be unlocked? Yeah. How about Hades? Yeah, it's still there. All right. 1 Corinthians 15. This is just after the resurrection. Death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your sting? O Hades, where is your victory? So it would appear that they still exist. As I say, I've met preachers in the Lord's church who think that after Jesus was raised from the dead, all the people who were in paradise immediately went into heaven. And but it seems to indicate here that there is still a place where people are enslaved or locked in, and that Jesus has the keys and he's going to get them out of there. And then the last point, Revelation 20, which is symbolic, so you have to be a little bit careful, but death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. Anyone who was not written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So it would appear that death and Hades are not permanent. They're not eternal. And if they're not eternal going one way, what does that mean about the other way? They're not eternal either way. So at some point, these two things came into existence. Now, we know before Adam and Eve sinned, was there death? Because God said, in the day you eat it, you will die. So at that moment, death became a reality. No, whether God created it or whether it was simply the natural response. Because Paul said, I was alive apart from the law. When the commandment came, sin came alive and I died. And Paul also says in chapter 5, death passed to all men because all men sinned. So sin is inextricably tied to death. And when each person sins, they die. What about babies? See, they never sin, so do they ever die? Yes. Not this kind of death, right? Not the death of eternal, this death. They do die physically. All right. So, number one, death and Hades are not eternal, right at the bottom of page 3. They had a beginning, they'll have an end. Number two, Hades is in the third heaven with paradise, Abraham's bosom, and a great gulf and torment where the ungodly have been taken. I don't see whether we are imagining this or stretching this. I think it's just the natural, necessary inferences based on Jesus was in Hades, he came out of Hades, he called it paradise. The rich man was in Hades, it's called torments, and that's where I think we can draw these conclusions. But as I said, it doesn't really matter, because how long is this going to last? Just till the resurrection. Then what happens? Then what we know happens. We get a new heavens and a new earth. We get a new resurrected body. No tears, no sorrows, no griefs any longer. All of that will begin at that point. All right, let's go ahead and turn to page 4. Okay, the word torments. Interesting Greek word. I didn't take the time to put it in here. But it is used. Let me just read this one paragraph. Some have used torments as the name of the place, while others see the place as nameless and only what occurs there. This word was used of the torture that Rome inflicted on criminals, of the terrible agony of certain illnesses. He was grievously tormented. The word means anguish and agony of heart and body. A terrible word, leaving to the imagination the details. It's the worst things that man can endure. And so whether this is the name of the place or whether this is what happens in the place is, again, we're right in the middle of Deuteronomy 29:20. Doesn't really matter, does it? If that's its name, it doesn't matter. We know what's going on there. I'm in anguish in this flame. And I need Lazarus to dip his finger in water and put it on the tip of my tongue. Okay, so again, we got all kinds of things now that we got to figure out. All right, so let's look at this next point. He lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. These are the beginnings of the details that have led some to think we're reading a parable. So many questions without answers. Do all have the opportunity to see and speak to Abraham as this man here? Can those in torment see those in paradise? Can questions be asked and answered by everyone? And what's the answer to that? We don't know. We don't know. But we do know this, that next paragraph, the rest of the account paints a perfect confirmation to the scoffing Pharisees that all their justifications will not change the fact that their attitudes are an abomination in the sight of God, and that if they don't repent and listen to Jesus, they will share the same fate. And so there may be a real rich man, there may be a real Lazarus. This all may have actually occurred, or it may be that parts of it occurred. But as I said a moment ago, it doesn't matter, because Jesus would not leave us with an impression that's not true. So, but we are way far out of our domain. I wish we had other passages that we could go to, but there's just nothing on this point. Absolutely nothing about what happens. Some people like to go over to 1 Peter, where it says Jesus went and preached to the spirits in prison, but that's not what that's referring to. I think that's referring to what Noah did while they were still on the earth. Because let's face it, if somebody goes into Hades and preaches that they can get out of there, what are they going to do? We going to have 100% conversion rate? So, and it doesn't make any sense. Plus, where was Jesus? He was in paradise. What's between paradise and torments? A chasm. How'd he get over there and how'd he get back? So, I think that that passage, it's a complicated passage. It's Peter's attempt to be like Paul, to speak things that are hard to be understood, which the ignorant and unsteadfast twist to their own destruction. So, tough passage. All right, number 20, verse 24 there. He cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in torment in this flame. Now, at best, these are spiritual punishments with physical applications, because what about this finger? What about this tongue? What about this water? Are these in existence in paradise and Hades? Maybe. Maybe. Maybe things in paradise aren't that much different than they are here. We just don't know. But Jesus offers some very interesting details out of the mouth of this man. First of all, have mercy on me. What's the one thing he never gave to Lazarus? To Lazarus at his gate. What he needed now, he hadn't bought. You remember what Jesus said? Blessed are the merciful, for they will obtain mercy. That's in the Beatitudes. And then later he says, with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with what measure you mete out, it will be measured back to you. James makes the application, judgment is without mercy to him who showed no mercy. So this rich man wants something that he can't have, and that's what Jesus' point. Make friends of yourself with unrighteous mammon. Use that money in merciful ways, and then when you need mercy, it'll be there for you. There's no mercy for this man because the time has passed. The gulf is fixed. There's nothing they can do, even if they wanted to. Charles?
Yeah, also, this is also saying, too, that this man had one of our senses also, too. Our senses is if you're working hard somewhere and you start sweating or whatever, I want a cool drink of water. So, in other words, he had enough to know, that he needed water, to cool his tongue, and everything. So that's something right there that we should be aware of also, too, that where we are, we can't get water. Where you are there, he couldn't, where he was there, he couldn't get any water, anything like that. So one of the senses is something that we have, and I think of all the senses that we have, that's one of them that's just displayed in this verse right here.
Right. And it all comes back to those 6 or 7 points he made after the unprofitable servant, that you can use unrighteous mammon to purchase certain things so that they will receive you into eternal tabernacles. You can use that to prove your faithfulness. You can use that to lay up treasures in heaven. And that's what we need to do, because once it's gone, it's gone. And if we didn't use it for the life to come, we used it here, it's gone forever. George, you have a comment?
Yes, to me, makes perfect sense to say that what is attributed to the rich man here and his sayings to Father Abraham is figurative, not realistic. Because from what the rest of the Bible says, I don't think torments in Hades or hell are going to have water and things of that nature.
Yeah, and I kind of feel that whatever the spiritual discomfort is depicted by flame and worms and torment and agony, whether there'll be real worms there, whether that's just a depiction, whether there will be real fire and darkness there, whether there is a bottomless pit, these are all descriptions that they should scare us to death. I mean, does anybody want to have to experience any of that stuff? I don't want to know whether it's literal or not. I don't want anything to do with it. Jesus doesn't exaggerate. Whatever's going to be hell is going to be worse than that. Whether it's literal or not, I need that water on my tongue. I can't hardly get my words out right now. So, yeah, I just, as I say, we're really hemmed in here because we just don't have, this is it. This is all we have about the interim period between the death and the resurrection. And it's all we have. And we don't know how far to carry these things. Paul?
This should scare us. I mean, this imagery, I mean, he's putting in the best words that we can understand. And this imagery should just scare us. This should frighten us because this is a place we do not want to experience.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
It also ought to get us to use our money wisely, right?
Yeah. Well,
use our money for spiritual things because this is his conclusion. Use your money for these things. And so the unjust steward flows right into the rich man Lazarus. All right. So verse 25, remember that in your lifetime you received good things. Likewise, Lazarus, evil things. But now he is comforted and you are tormented. Now, again, Abraham's words echo exactly what Jesus just taught in the parable of the unjust steward. Now, once again, I don't think the reason that Lazarus is in heaven or in Abraham's bosom is only because he received evil things. It's because he was a saint. It's because he was someone who followed the law and was righteous in his dealings. So, but at the same time, one of the reasons that the rich man cannot receive any blessings now is because he had the good things, and what did he do? He had no compassion. He had no desire whatsoever to help. All right, so verse 26, again, besides all this, there is a great gulf fixed so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot. Now, who would want to pass from paradise into torment? But he says you can't. And the same thing, you cannot pass over. There's a great gulf fixed. So there's no purgatory. Death ends everything. If you were prepared, death ends in paradise. If you were unprepared, death ends in torment. All right, we'll go ahead and stop there, and we will quickly finish up next week, just kind of touch on some of these things a little bit. I really want to focus on this latter part here where he wants Lazarus to go back. And so that's what we'll spend our time on next week. Thanks, everybody.